We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, and America's Constitution Coach, with you on Tuesdays and Thursdays normally. But it's not Tuesday, so you're thinking, wow, this is weird. What's going on here? Walker's got a couple of days of other things to do, so I get you today as well. Man, this is going to be a fun week. I think I actually get you Wednesday, too, so we're just maybe even Friday. What happens if you're stuck with me all week long? I don't know. Maybe just have to trade it out, give Walker a whole week. No, listen, I love the fact
for that the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready.
That's
right.
That's what it's going to be like all week long. We're going to be rumbling. That's right. This will be the rumble in the jungle. No, wait, what was it? Yeah, was that the, that was, who was that? That was George Foreman and Muhammad Ali, I think, if I remember right. Anyway, we're going to do a lot of rumbling this week because there is a lot to cover, and I want to hear from you. Okay, so lots of phone calls this week. I don't always get to them, but I'm going to try this week to do as many phone calls as we can because I just love hearing from you and what's going on out there. It gives me a good kind of temperature read as well in terms of what folks are thinking and what's important to you and how you're feeling about some of these hot topics. So I'm going to fly through some of the hot topics. We'll talk good, bad, and the ugly each day. We'll hit some of those topics, and then, of course, we'll take your calls in the middle of that. 888-589-8840 is the phone number, 888-589-8840. And if you want to learn more about what we're doing on the ground in communities all across the country, you can go to patriotacademy.com. You can be one of our Constitution coaches. We hit 25,000 coaches now, and just a lot of good stuff. Man, I saw some classes last week with hundreds of people in them. Up in Oklahoma, out in Seattle, I mean, all over the country. So good stuff happening. Okay, let's hit some of the headlines. This one jumped out at me because, you know, we know this is true. This is not going to shock anybody, but it just sort of verifies how hard it is to find truth out there and why it's so important for you to be listening to At the Core. And not just At the Core, but all of the programs here at American Family Radio. And Media Research Center did a study on how the media has covered the Trump indictment coverage and the Biden bribery scandal. And check this out. This is not even close. This is insane. They spent 491 minutes. So I didn't do any math on that, but I think that's roughly 8 hours, a little more than 8 hours, on the Trump indictment. And guess how many minutes, how many hours, how many days on the Biden scandal. This is the Biden crime family stuff that happened with Burisma and the $5 million that Joe got, the $5 million that Hunter got, and how this executive has recordings of all of this and how, you know, they Biden bragged about it at the, you know, on national television that he had got, you know, gotten them to fire the prosecutor that was investigating the company that his son served on the board, yada, yada, yada. We've talked about it a bunch. Maybe we'll go into it. We'll see. But guess how much time these networks spent covering the Biden crime. This is the president of the United States, the man occupying the White House, not duly elected, but duly inaugurated after stealing the election. Yes, I said it. And now this guy, his corruption is being uncovered. We're finding out the FBI's been covering for him, certainly covering for his son. Now we find out covering for him as well. This should be the story that everybody's talking about. Guess how many minutes? Guess how many hours? Neither. Not a single second. ABC, CBS, and NBC not even touching it with a 10-foot pole. You would think that would be a story. I mean, even if it's false, right? Like, even if the claims turn out not to be true. I mean, what if Hunter Biden is actually an angel? What if he is a choir boy and this whole laptop thing is completely made up and he didn't really have all these prostitutes with him and he didn't really spend, you know, what was it, $75,000 with this sex club that he got kicked out of because he was so horrible, that he didn't really do all the cocaine, that he didn't really take all the bribes, that he didn't trade on daddy's name, that the WhatsApp texts are made up, that he didn't really say to these executives, my money now. I'm sitting next to the big guy, or however it was that he said it. What if all of that's not true? It's still an incredible story. Like, that anybody would even claim this stuff is happening. Any news outlet worth its salt should at least be saying, we don't know if this is true, but these are sensational claims. I mean, this is stuff that's never happened before in American politics to this level. Always been corruption, don't get me wrong, but nothing to this level. So we need to at least cover the story. We need to at least say there are people out there claiming this. In fact, not just that people are claiming this, but that credible people are claiming this. In other words, it's not like this is coming from, you know, just some former porn star like some of the claims against Donald Trump. It's not like this stuff is coming from some, you know, person that's never had any credibility or that has a reputation for actually lying or any of that. No, these claims are coming from what even the Biden-controlled, left-wing taken FBI claims are credible sources. So if you have credible sources saying that the president of the United States took a $5 million bribe, now I just let that number sink in. More money than I've ever made in my lifetime. Probably most people listening, more money than you've made in your whole lifetime combined, right? I mean, this is a lot of money. And that he took a $5 million bribe, and his son, who did in fact have prostitutes, crack cocaine, all the stuff on the laptop, it's not just true. There's video evidence of it. It's not like somebody's just claiming it. The video evidence is there. All of this. And they still don't cover it. Remarkable. If that doesn't prove to you that the lamestream media is exactly that, and that it is completely, completely taken by the left and in bed with politicians, actually defending them, covering for them, and not bringing the truth to the American people and letting the people decide. If that doesn't prove it, I don't know what possibly could. And so I know you're listening. I know. I'm preaching to the choir. I know. You're already aware of this. You've already turned off, CNN and ABC and CBS and NBC and said, you know, these people are not reporting truth, and therefore I will, you know, find a better source. Of course, that source being American Family Radio. So you're already there, but I feel like sometimes we need to just know that it's backed up by data. It's not just a feeling, right? We don't just feel like these people are out of control or that they're biased in their reporting. The data backs it up and shows it. So what do we do about it? I mean, I don't want to be a show where we just, you know, talk about the problems and we don't talk about solutions. What do we do about it? Well, folks, the First Amendment and the freedom of the press is no different than the First Amendment freedom of religion from the standpoint of it's a worthless right if we don't use it. In other words, what good is your freedom of religion if you're not living your faith? Had an amazing weekend with Eric Metaxas and Gene Bailey and just Hank Kuhneman and these guys, and we were in sync, man. We had this great seminar, conference, whatever you want to call it, Engage the Nation on Saturday, and everybody, I mean, the message was just so similar, and one of the underlying themes that came through from all of us as we talked was, what good are these rights if we aren't living them? And Eric Metaxas put a stamp on it, man. I mean, I like drove a stake into it when he said, faith without works is dead, and if you have no works backing up your faith, you don't really have faith. If you claim to be a Christian and claim to believe in God and claim to believe in his teachings and claim to follow the Bible, but you don't act on it, you don't really have faith. You're just talking, man. You're just talk's a good game. No, it's not a good game. You're just blabbering. You're literally a gong sounding cymbal, whatever the expression is. I'm lost there. That's all you are. And I thought Metaxas was just incredible this weekend. The things that he said, I felt like someone was on stage giving my speeches, but with way better articulation and much more intelligence. The guy's brilliant. I mean, the guy is just an absolute a genius. And everything he said. In fact, I actually spoke first, and then he and. And then when he got done, I was like, hey, Eric, everything you said, I've either said or wanted to say. It was just a beautiful kind of really cool dance that we were doing in terms of saying the same things in a little bit different way. You know, him in his New York, in you know, a brilliant, intelligent, intellectual way, and me in my country boy, you know, redneck way. So anyway, it was great. But the point is, faith without works is dead. And these people that claim to believe all these things but then don't act on it, you know, what's the point? So how do we act on this? We live out the First Amendment. We live out our religion. It impacts everything that we do. Freedom of religion and the First Amendment means nothing if we aren't living out our faith. It's the same with freedom of the press. But unlike past generations where freedom of the press was something we cared about because we wanted truth and we didn't want the state to go in and take over ABC and NBC and CBS, the only three networks back in the day, we didn't want the state going in and telling Walter Cronkite what to say. We didn't want the state going in and telling Ted Koppel, here's your notes for tonight. I mean, that was our view of freedom of the press, a proper view of freedom of the press. But it's more than that. It's more than we don't want the state to take them over and tell them what to do, which they did during COVID, by the way. The Biden administration told them what to say, told them who to silence, not just the major networks, but big tech, which is where most people are now getting their media on a daily basis, getting their news. So it is that. We don't want the state controlling media, but it is also with the right of freedom of the press, the responsibility now to be the press. In other words, you cannot just say, I want to have a free press in America. You have to take the mantle yourself and say, I'm going to be the press. What do I mean by that? You have to be the person that is helping people in your community, and when I say community, I don't even mean just your neighborhood. Community is the people that we network with and know and spend time with. So I'm talking about your community in your social media community, people that you know that live all over the country, and you're connected to them through this incredible technology that we have that can be evil or be good depending on how we use it. And so you now have a responsibility to be the press, and actually by sharing good stories, sharing good reports, sharing sometimes tough to hear reports or sermons or messages. Okay, so for instance, when you listen to American Family Radio, when you listen to At the Core in the afternoon, to then turn around and share it with your friends and family, that's a force multiplier. That's a citizen being the press. And for you, it might mean starting your own blog, starting your own, you know, weekly report that you just literally do with your cell phone, that you just sit down on your own front porch and do a quick 10-minute update on what happened that week and put it on social media. And then share with them links to At the Core and links to maybe one of my Constitution classes or some other Patriot Academy program or what we did yesterday on Engage the Nation. Just finding good reports and good information that might be tough to hear but has solutions with it. So that's a simple part of a response to this biased media, is that you, listening right now, you have to become the press. You have to become like the pastors were in the founding era. The pastors were the press. They got up and shared what was going on in the world. They got up and shared from the pulpit, here's what's been happening. And you're going to have to do that. You're going to have to take there's a monument at Freedom's Foundation in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. And it's called the Bill of Responsibilities. And it used to be, so on one side is the Bill of Rights, and on the other side is the Bill of Responsibilities. Used to be something that we embraced. And you know I'm going to constantly challenge you. I'm just going to kind of make this a theme throughout the week. Not just to talk about our rights, but to talk about our responsibilities. With every fundamental natural right we have, from the laws of nature and nature's God, comes a corresponding responsibility. The right of freedom of religion, you got to live your faith. Freedom of the press, now you have to be the press. You have to be a force multiplier. The right of self-defense, you have a responsibility to get trained to do that the proper way. So we'll be making that a theme throughout the week. A lot more headlines to get to, and of course your phone calls, 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. Let's live our rights and be responsible. Let's live out our responsibilities that come with those rights. Stay with us. You're listening to Rick Green on At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. It's Monday, and Rick Green sitting in for Walker today. I'll be with you all week, and the phone number is 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. Hitting some of the headlines before we get to the phones. I was just talking about the whole media bias thing where they didn't mention the Biden Burisma bribery. So the Biden crime family's, it's out in the open if you can find it, but the major media outlets not covering it at all while they spent 491 minutes over 8 hours on the Trump indictment. So, of course, it's a one-way street, folks. That's why we don't watch ABC, CBS, or NBC, and we do everything we can to direct our dollars to organizations, outlets, individuals that are supporting the cause and pro-America and not, showing this anti-American, two-tier justice, two-tier treatment of people based on color of skin, political affiliation, religious affiliation, all these reasons they discriminate. You know, that's why DEI actually, they say it's diversity. No, it's discrimination. It's not diversity. It's discrimination. The left, the Democrats, they are the racist. They are the ones discriminating, as usual. And now the Supreme Court is discriminating and being racist once again. They throw out another congressional map. They started with Alabama. Now they've done it to Louisiana. And it's literally absolute racism. They want to choose members of Congress based on the color of the person's skin. Yes. No, this is not. I mean, this is the very definition of racism. And the United States Supreme Court, once again, engaging in absolute racism by saying, hey, Louisiana, hey, Alabama, you will draw your congressional lines so biased that it guarantees people will be elected based on the color of their skin. I would have thought that was 60 years ago. That's supposed to be, 50s, 60s racism. That's supposed to be the stuff that MLK marched against. I mean, I guess I'm in some kind of, I don't know, maybe I'm lost. Maybe I'm asleep in MLK's dream. All right? He said he had a dream. Maybe I'm sleeping and just dreaming about the idea that we would, in America, actually judge people based on the content of their character, not the color of their skin. But here we are. Here we are once again. And the crazy thing is, think about how the world has flipped on us, folks. The crazy thing is, Alabama is where all the racism was so bad. I mean, this is the place where you had institutional racism 60 years ago. You could not sit at the counter with someone of a different color of skin by law. That's what you call institutional racism, systemic racism, okay? We used to have that in some places in America. We haven't had that for a very long time. That's why the Black Lives Mafia, Black Lives Maoist out there, that's why they were so wrong in what they did 2 years ago, 3 years ago. That's why they were so wrong in what they said and how they marched on cities and claimed systemic racism was still around. No, systemic racism is when it's in your law that you must be a racist. All right, we don't have that, or we didn't have that in America, but now the Supreme Court is saying, yeah, we're going to keep that. In fact, in Alabama, we're just going to flip it. We're going to say you have to be a racist in Alabama. You have to draw your congressional lines so that members of Congress are chosen based on the color of their skin. And if you cannot guarantee that a certain number of people will be elected to Congress that have the right color of skin, you pick the color, folks. Black, white, brown, yellow. I thought we were past that. I thought we were not going to judge each other based on that. Unbelievable. This stuff, I get righteously angry over this because I think that when you vote for someone for Congress, it shouldn't matter what the color of their skin is. What should matter is, what do they stand for? How are they going to vote when they get to Congress? How will they represent us? What do they believe in? Are they a person that has values? Do they actually have a plumb line that they measure legislation by? Do they believe in limited government? Do they believe that the federal government should only do what the Constitution says they can do? Do they believe in individual liberties? Do they believe in free enterprise? Do they believe in timeless truths? Those are the things that we teach at Patriot Academy, the LIFT principles. And that's how I vote for people. I don't care if they're black, if they're brown, if they're white, if they're bronze. I don't care if they're purple. And that's the way it should be in America. That was MLK's dream. We are spitting on his grave. We are absolutely doing the opposite of what MLK dreamed of and what I thought we were for in America. And you've got a United States Supreme Court that is supporting this nonsense. Not just supporting it, demanding it. Telling Alabama, you cannot judge people by the content of their character. You must, Alabama and Louisiana, you must, by law, by an edict of, and don't forget it says at the top of that, an opinion of the United States Supreme Court. It's an opinion. It should not be the law of the land. Anyway, the opinion of the Supreme Court is now the law for Alabama and Louisiana. And the law now says, according to them, you will be racist whether you want to be racist or not. How ironic that it is Alabama, the first place they did that. The ruling was, 2 weeks ago on June 8th. 5-4 decision in that one. And I have not had a chance to go read the dissents. This Louisiana one, I don't know yet if there's a dissent. But it grieves me. It grieves me that we're going backwards. We're going back to racism instead of saying no. As Alveda King taught me and taught my children, standing in the Ebenezer Baptist Church, standing in the church where MLK and A.D. King, the Sons of Thunder, where they grew up, where they preached their first sermons, where she, Alveda King, grew up. She stood there and she told my kids, sitting there on the front pew, we did a tour of the church, and then she's telling us all these incredible stories. She looks at my kids and she says, you know, we're the same race. My kids kind of looked at her funny because my kids are pretty lily white, I will say. She's obviously not. And so she says, we're the same race. My kids are looking at her like, huh? And she says, we're all part of the human race. It's only one race. She said, you are my white brothers and sisters. I have black brothers and sisters. I have red brothers and sisters. That's the dream. That's it. That we're all part of the same human race. And we need to stop judging each other based on color of skin. Shame on the United States Supreme Court. Shame on you. And shame on you, Democrat Party, for bringing these lawsuits to try to maintain the racism that you have always been about. The Democrats are the ones that did the white-only primaries. The Democrats are the ones that fought to keep slavery. The Democrats are the ones that did all the Jim Crow laws. The Democrats are the ones that have always been racist, and they are still the racist, and they proved it with these lawsuits where they filed lawsuits to say, you will give us congressional maps that are based on color of skin rather than content of character. I'm embarrassed for you, Democrat Party. I'm ashamed that you would push for this, and I'm ashamed that our United States Supreme Court, with a what is supposed to be 6-3 conservative majority, which we all know is really more like a 2 true, solid, all-the-time conservatives in Sam Alito and Clarence Thomas, 3 that Donald Trump gave us. Thank you, Donald Trump. Best part of your presidency, no doubt about it. But 3 justices that are sometimes conservative, sometimes very much not conservative, and you just never know how, you know, if you can cobble together a conservative majority. And sometimes we do. Last summer, we got some great decisions out of the United States Supreme Court. This year, not so much. These are bad decisions, very bad decisions. And it's just going to prolong racism. I mean, what happens when you judge people based on color of skin? You get more racism, and you cause people to be racist. I mean, this is exactly what Dinesh D'Souza wrote about all those years ago. At 26 years old, he wrote his first book, Illiberal Education. And I was in law school at the time at the University of Texas, and I was watching exactly what he wrote about in the book happen. When you judge people based on color of skin, when you have admission policies in schools and colleges based on affirmative action, when you elect people based on color of skin and you rig the game, you literally draw the lines to make sure that someone is elected of a certain color of skin. When you do all of those things, You foment racism. You create more racism. You cause people to then look at someone based on the color of their skin and say, you're only here because of the color of your skin. The deck was stacked for the color of your skin rather than the content of your character or the merit of your application or the merit of your hard work in high school or college. And that cheapens it for everybody. I mean, if Harvard had let me in because they had a redneck quota, if Harvard had said, you know, we don't have enough of those Southern draw country boys from Texas. We need a few more of those here at Harvard's, you know, to hang out with some of these high and mighty hoity-toity folks so that some of these country boys can learn some Miss Manners, you know, learn which fork to use first for the salad and which cup to drink, all that silly stuff that I never figured out. We need some of these country boys at Harvard so that, you know, we can meet our affirmative action standard for Harvard. If they had done that, and that was their standard, and they made it known that was their standard, I would have sat in class every day with, you know, my country accent, and every time I ask a question, everybody in the room would have looked at me and said, you're only here because of the redneck standard. You're only here because of the redneck quota. You're only here because of the redneck the requirement of affirmative action for rednecks here at Harvard. And no one would have thought I was there out of merit. No one would have thought I was there because I actually had a brain. And that's what happened all the way back into the 90s, even in my law school class at the University of Texas. It actually hurt people of color, if I can use the progressive term. And so because you had affirmative action, because you put everybody in a separate list, they literally at that time, this is what the Hopwood case was all about, was they would take everybody and rank them according to their law school, their LSAT score and their GPA. And at first it was first 200 get in based entirely on you had the highest of those two averages, those two things averaged together. And then it was, okay, we'll take the first guy or gal on the list of white people, and then the first guy or gal on the list of black people, and then the first guy or gal on the list of brown people. Instead of having them all together and it'd be entirely based on merit, now it was based on the color of your skin. So then what happens? So then everybody in law school looks at each other and says, well, if you're a certain color, then you're here only because of affirmative action. When you actually had people of color that were there entirely on merit, they earned the right to be there. But now because of this rigged, stacked deck system, nobody knows. So then they start judging each other based on color of skin. You see how this cycle happens? And then it creates and foments racism between the races. It's an absolute Marxist ideology that divides us every time. And the United States Supreme Court just perpetrated it. They just prolonged it. They just once again said to Alabama and Louisiana, you're not being racist enough. We need you to be more racist. We're going to make you by law be more racist. I hate this stuff, folks. It is evil and wrong. And the reason I hate it is because God hates it. The Bible says very clear we're to judge each other not based on color of skin. There is neither Jew nor Greek. It doesn't matter what your nationality is. We're supposed to judge each other based on the heart, based on the action, based on the things that you're actually doing, not the color of your skin. This is anti-biblical, anti-American, anti-MLK's dream that should be the American dream, and it's wrong, and we should say so, which I guess I've done for the last 10 minutes. Sorry for taking so long on my rant, but I saw this right before I came on the air, and it was just another example of these, you know, talk about these hoity-toity people from these Ivy League schools like Harvard and everywhere. This is why, if we're going to have a quota, the quota on the Supreme Court should be, we need at least half of you to not be from an Ivy League school, because you get so wrapped up in this nonsense, these ridiculous, it's Romans 1:22, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. And so these Supreme Court justices, the Democrat Party, all these people that want racism, all these people that want us to be judging each other based on the color of our skin, they are professing fools. They act like they're wise, and they act like, oh, this will deal with, what is their phrase, historically marginalized communities. That is such a load of malarkey. That is all a bunch of hoity-toity arguments so that they can be racist at their core. That's all it is. It's window dressing to perpetrate racism. We should be against it. We should stand against it. And frankly, Alabama and Louisiana should thumb their nose at the Supreme Court on this and say thanks, but no thanks. We decide, according to the Constitution, how our congressional lines will be drawn, not you. There is nothing in the Constitution that gives the Congress or the Supreme Court the authority to determine how congressional lines are drawn in each individual state. That power is determined by those individual states. Individual states have the power to choose how their electors are chosen for the presidential election. If the founding fathers had known that the federal government was going to turn around and tell the states how to choose their leaders to send to the federal government, they would have never supported the Constitution. Frankly, this is part of what the anti-federalists were all about. They said it looks good right now on paper, but what happens when the federal government expands its power? Or what happens when the federal government does things that we didn't give them the power to do? This is part of why Patrick Henry didn't go to the Constitutional Convention and said, I smell a rat. I'm America's Constitution coach. I'm pro-Constitution. I love the Constitution. I defend the Constitution. But the warnings of the anti-federalists have turned out to be right. The distortions of what has happened has brought their predictions to become true. And so we need a new federalism. We need to restore federalism in this country, go back to letting the states have the power to make these decisions themselves, not the federal government. What's the federal government there for? War, commerce, post offices and post roads, patents and copyrights and trademarks. That's all they're supposed to do, is those types of things. And yet here they are, telling Alabama and Louisiana, you have to be racist. Okay, got carried away, didn't get to the phones. Shame on me. Hey, Chris, David, all the rest of you out there, we'll get to you when we come back from the break. 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. A lot more headlines to get to as well. We just don't have time. I'm glad I get to do every day this week. All right, we'll have some more fun when we come back from the break. Stay with us. I'm Rick Green. You're listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for staying with me today. We've been talking about these insane Supreme Court decisions requiring racism in Louisiana and Alabama. It will create more racism in other states as well, because these legislators will all be paranoid as they're drawing the state line, the redistricting lines for these congressional lines. We've got to still judge people based on color of skin, or else the Supreme Court's going to slap us down. So we've got to make sure we've got districts that are racist and that elect, you know, a few people that are the right color of purple and of red and of blue. No, it's not quite that color, but it's the same thing. It's the same thing. Oh, it's so infuriating. Okay, before I go to the phones, one more that just kind of fits into this category. This is what happens when you discriminate, not diversify, discriminate, and that's what they're doing. This is hilarious. This story cracks me up. So New York, which in and of itself is a punchline these days, but New York has the most woke weed laws, and they are an absolute failure. So all these states that have legalized weed and are now getting hundreds of millions of dollars of tax revenue off of it, New York has only managed to get $50 million off of this craziness. And the reason is because I can't help but laugh when I say this. New York put in place these weed laws where we're going to legalize weed, but only certain people can sell it. And the people that get to sell it, get this, they need to be convicted of marijuana-related offenses. Or they need to come from an area that's disproportionately impacted by past enforcement of cannabis laws. Are you kidding me? So basically what they're saying, we're going to legalize weed, and we want to make sure that the folks that broke the law to sell weed before it was legalized get an advantage over anybody else that wants to be in business. Oh, by the way, it also, they have social equity applicants that it can be a women-owned business or a business owned by, quote, people of color. Well, which colors? They can be minority or women-owned business enterprises. You've got to be kidding me. You've got to be kidding me. That's how insane the left is. And here's the headline describing this absolute unfairness. The headline is how New York's new marijuana law plants the seeds of fairness by being unfair. Yeah, two legs bad, four legs good. if anybody's read Animal Farm by George Orwell. It's unbelievable what these people are doing. Okay, enough is enough. Let's get to the phones. 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. Let's head over to Kansas first. David, how you doing, man? Sorry for making you wait so long. I got a little carried away today. What's your comment or question or insult? Go for it.
I get it. Hey, I wanted to take you back in the conversation. Perhaps a month ago, I was watching PBS, public broadcasting, and they've got a show on the air called Washington Week. And on the Washington Week, for those of you who may not be familiar with it, it's a reporter's roundtable. And in this, it may have, again, been a month ago, in this reporter's roundtable, they actually talked about how they plan to report on Donald Trump and his run for the presidency. And in so doing, they pretty much, summarize what they were saying was they had a duty to protect the American people from anything that Donald Trump said, and that in this duty, they would not be reporting in any favorable way on the Donald Trump campaign. And what I find very upsetting about that is PBS, at least in part, is publicly funded. I'm going to hang up and listen to your commentary. Thank you.
Oh, David, you're right on, brother. We're paying for it, bro. You and me and everybody else listening. We are paying for them to be absolutely biased. We are paying for them to be a protector of Democrats and a persecutor of Republicans. That's essentially what they've decided to do. They've decided that someone disagrees with them enough and is frankly effective enough at winning for conservatives and against liberals, that they will not allow that person's voice to be heard, that they will literally refuse to share whatever the news is about that particular campaign. If this is not state-controlled media, I don't know what could be. If this is not anti-free press and anti-First Amendment, I don't know. I mean, they're literally picking the winners and losers. They are deciding what is allowed to be spoken. And I'm not talking, this doesn't mean, some people may be thinking, okay, well, if you can't just let everybody's voice be heard. Agreed. I mean, I don't think someone that it runs for president and is polling at 0.000, like not even registering on the polling, I don't think they have a right to say ABC has to cover me or PBS has to cover me and give me an interview. But if you are the leading candidate for one of the two parties that's going to win, there's no third party candidate going to win. So if you're the leading candidate and the former president, you're actually not the incumbent this time around, but you're the incumbent that was there last time around, I'd say you have a platform and that you should absolutely be covered by every news outlet and your voice should be heard. And there was a time in America where we would say to each other, I don't agree with you, but I would fight and die for your right to speak and to say what you believe, and then I will counter what you believe. We will have civil discourse and then let the people decide. That's what you do in a free society. You don't say, I think what you're saying is so dangerous. Your speech is violence. I think what you're saying is so dangerous that I cannot allow you to say it. That is what a communist does. That is what an enemy of freedom does. If you believe in freedom and you believe in free speech, you let the speech happen and then you counter it. It is a death knell for a free society when free speech is not allowed from the major political parties. You're talking about someone here in Donald Trump, whether you love him or hate him, you're talking about someone that was president of the United States and is clearly the front runner in the Republican Party by every poll. He's at least 20 points ahead. Most polls say 25 or 30 points ahead of his next closest competitor being Ron DeSantis, who I frankly like. I like both these guys. I haven't endorsed either one yet. But Donald Trump is clearly the front runner of the Republican Party, which is one of the two major parties. And you're going to not allow him to speak? You're going to censure this man and not allow his voice to be heard. based on, by the way, completely false claims. Anyone that says that Donald Trump encouraged violence on January 6th, anyone that says that Donald Trump stoked the fire that caused that is absolutely lying to you. Every one of his statements, every one of his tweets said, be peaceful. Everything he said was about don't do anything against the cops. Don't break things. Don't do anything that violates the law. All of it. There is no possible way to claim that Donald Trump encouraged violence or encouraged any of the stupid things that were done. Frankly, a lot of the things that were done by insurgents. Frankly, a lot of things that were done by FBI informants, agents, whatever, you know, category we're ever going to find out was actually involved here. Not by true Donald Trump supporters, true people that were there to just simply ask for the Constitution to be followed. Anyway, it's all a farce. It's 1930s Germany. You know, I mentioned in the first segment, I was with Eric Metaxas all weekend. And I some of you think I'm exaggerating when I've been saying it for years. We are living out 1930s Germany. Where did I get that? Eric Metaxas, studying Bonhoeffer, studying what actually happened in the 1930s. If you haven't read his Bonhoeffer book, I read it 12 years ago, and it rocked my world. You need to read Metaxas's Bonhoeffer book. And if you don't have time to read that one, it's 600 pages, then read his new one, Letter to the American Church, his shortest book ever, which summarizes how the church failed the nation of Germany in the 1930s and then failed the world by allowing Hitler to come to power and not speaking out against Hitler and actually buying into the whole idea of not living out your faith, not living out your free speech, not living out the freedom of press. So the church became the problem by being silent, and we're doing it again. We're doing it again. Anyway, everything that happened in 1930s Germany is exactly what's happening now. These political people are using the state apparatus of PBS, the news outlet, of the Department of Justice, of the FBI. They're using it to persecute their political enemies exactly as Hitler did. They used January 6th here in America to be the Rostock fire from 1933 in Germany. Exact same scenario. I mean, it is identical, the things that they did, especially Biden's speech at the Independence Hall with, you know, with the red lights behind him and the Marine silhouette and the power of, you know, and calling us enemies of democracy and threats to democracy and all that, which, by the way, we are a threat to democracy. Democracy, the founders called it mobocracy. They called it one of the greatest of evils. We are not a democracy in America. So I am an enemy of democracy. I am for a republic. I am opposed to democracy. I am for a republic. We are not a democracy. We are a constitutional republic. That's another story. Where was I going with all that? Oh, the phone call. Yes, and the phones. Let's go back to the phones. But great call and absolutely right. PBS, the fact that they would silence Donald Trump proves that they are Marxist. Okay, let's go to, let's see, how about John was next. Yeah, John in Mississippi, I think it is. Yeah, John, how you doing, man? Thanks for calling in. Thanks for being so patient. Go ahead.
I'm doing great. Thank you for taking my call. Love your program. Love American Family Radio. Listen whenever I can.
Thank you, man.
My question is, do you think Alabama and Louisiana will stand strong against the Supreme Court decision and go with states' rights, because it is their right to determine the drawing those lines for voting districts? Isn't that part of a nullification?
Well, first answer is no, I don't think they will do that. I don't think there's enough people with the political backbone to do that at the positions of leadership in either of those states. Secondly, when we use the word nullification, I want to be very clear what I mean when I say nullification, and this may or may not be what you mean by nullification. Single state nullification is something that is not constitutional, and even though they tried it and early on, and some people advocated for it, some people think that Jefferson and Madison advocated for it. They really didn't. They were for getting enough states together to nullify with a multi-state nullification, which is simply overruling the federal government, and you need a supermajority to do that. I am for that. I absolutely support nullification of federal action but it has to be done in the constitutional way, which is through the amendment process. And so I fully support that. I'm a big proponent of that. I'm very involved in that movement. It's called Convention of States. It's an Article 5 solution to overruling federal action. Now, I will say that single state nullification, it's not really even nullification, but single state fighting and standing against overreach of federal action should be done while on appeal of that federal action. And here's what I mean by that. So what these guys can do in Louisiana and Alabama, what they should do absolutely is say, no, we will not follow this Supreme Court decision because this Supreme Court decision is unconstitutional and it's wrong. And it's an overreach of federal power. So we're not going to follow it while we appeal, because a federal question of what is constitutional must be decided at the federal level or at the national level. So it has to be decided either by the Supreme Court, or the Congress and the president could overrule the Supreme Court together, or the president and Congress, a president could agree with the Supreme Court, and that would overrule the Congress. Two out of three wins at the federal level. Or the proper way for the states to do it without the feds is Article 5. Conventionofstates.com is the way that you do that. Conventionofstates.com. Go check it out. That is how you overrule the federal government and properly nullify a federal law. But it takes time. And so during that long, drawn-out process of overruling the federal government, a convention of states, man, we've been working on this for almost 9 years, and it's probably going to take another 5 years to get there. So that's a long process. So I support single state resistance, if you will, saying we're not going to follow that federal overreach while we're on appeal, while we're trying to get this amendment process done. If we don't get it done, if we don't get a convention of states, or if you have the convention of states and they vote down your proposed amendment to the Constitution that then has to, of course, be ratified by 38 states, then at that point you lose, and it's now the federal law, which is how you do things, and you prevent states from doing crazy things. So there's a whole process here that has to be followed. It takes time. I absolutely think Louisiana and Alabama should say no to this Supreme Court decision while working on a constitutional amendment to say states decide. And I know this Constitution already says this, but you need an amendment that would overrule the federal interpretation. Because here's the thing, folks. In my final 60 seconds, we don't live under the Constitution in America right now. We live under the Constitution, and we have to overrule the court just like we did with the 11th Amendment. That was the states overruling a Supreme Court decision. We got to start doing that more often. The states have to stand up. State legislators are the most powerful individuals in the Constitution if they use their power under Article 5 to overrule the federal government. They have to use that power. And that's part of what we do at Patriot Academy, is educate people how to use the Constitution. Become a Constitution coach today, folks, and you can help educate people in your community on this. How do we live out our citizenship properly? Out of time for today. I'll be with you tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. You've been listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Faith, family, freedom. American Family Radio.